Special relationships and transatlantic correspondence galore. It's time for another installment of New York Real Talk on Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
Well, it's a slightly more somber New York Real Talk than normal because this particular New York Real Talk, I won't say it's a special, but it is something which hopefully will raise a number of issues across the Atlantic, certainly about something which Pamela Suman, our co-host, cares very deeply about. So without any further ado, Pamela, would you like to introduce the topic we're going to be focusing on in this particular edition of New York Real Talk?
Well, absolutely. And I'm actually, now that we are happily joined by Miglionico. please.
That's fine.
No, please correct us because...
It's Miglionico in English. It's Miglionico, yes.
Miglionico and Adriana, yes. Maria Rojas. That I can do. And also Mike Grassotti. I think I got that correctly. Okay,
yes.
Wonderful. I'm going to speak very, very briefly to my experience. And I'm going to leave it in the capable hands of the two of you to sort of take us through what has happened. But our background is that I have homeschooled my daughter, and she basically put herself into school. And I said, please, no, don't go to public school. Give her an arts education. We were upstate New York, and we came down to the city. She auditioned for this wonderful school, PPAS, which was originally started as a professional school for kids that were working. That was the purpose of the school, I believe. And so she was a working kid. She was homeschooling, came down, auditioned for the school, and thankfully got in. And the wonderful Terry Gindy, you know, opened her arms and helped us through as a wonderful parent coordinator. And so we were not really used to much bureaucracy because the little school that she was in beforehand was a little upstate hippie private school. We have never really had to deal with this sort of thing. So recently something has come to light. That has just been extraordinarily shocking, and especially to our family, because we're not used to dealing with the school system or the DOE, especially in New York City. So I am open to whoever wants to start first and sort of explain the pickle that we're in.
Sure. So hi, everybody. I'm Mike Rosati. I was actually PTA president at PPAS for a number of years. And now I'm still involved in the school. I'm on the PTA board, although not as president. And my daughter Sophia, she's a senior at the Performing Arts School. She was once in this drama program that is kind of the point of the issue today. She transferred in her senior year to the new film program, so she's not as directly, you know, involved as some of the other kids. But I've been jumping in and trying to help resolve this situation. And I'm not sure if Mark, maybe you want to give some background. So I understand you're a parent of a student who's more directly impacted. If you want to maybe share what your experience has been over the last couple weeks, and then I'd be happy to share. I've had a lot of conversations in the last few days about how we can, you know, work towards a solution. And you know, I can share that as well.
Yeah. Adrian is here now. We were like every other parent involved, we were kind of blindsided. And then, unfortunately, the chain of events that happened, not only was it blindsided, but then it came out a few days later that there were talks about this in the beginning of the year, October, January, February, and then we were being told March. So yeah. We said, wait a minute, there's emails. There's a string of emails that they won't come to light. They will not allow us to see those. There's work orders. And that's the one question I asked. I said, Tuldar, these things go enter into contracts. So there's a contract somewhere. Why is there no transparency with that? And she ignored me. She ignored one of the students that asked the same question in the principal meeting. And so we're at the point where we're like, this is just a go around. Waterwell has been transparent. They put out a public statement where if they were lying, that would be a litigious act. So we know that they are being fully transparent because they're running the risk of being sued if they're defaming Principal Dyer and the school. So we feel like They're being even more transparent, and Principal Dyer will not come up with any answers to the questions that we're having. And the students right now, our daughters, she got accepted to some big colleges, and some of them are contingent on your final transcript. And so when we heard this happening, and then when we went through the PTA meeting, what was even more egregious to us was somebody mentioned, why don't we just let the timeline run out and let Waterwell go by the wayside, and then we'll think about master classes. And we said, what kind of impact is that going to have on our child's transcripts? There's a trifecta. Right now there's a trifecta. There's PPAS, PTA, PPAS, and DOE, and then Waterwell's on the side trying to fight for the students. You know who's not in this trifecta? The students.
Absolutely. I want to jump in here. Please forgive me. I want to sort of explain, because we didn't give any information about what. No, no, no. It's okay. We received an email at nearly 12 a.m. I don't even know the date of this now, about a week ago.
The 29th, I think, the 29th to this March 6th, I think it was somewhere there.
Right. Okay. Oh, we're actually going to be joined by a senior drama student who is my daughter, Faye, Faye Leonard Mann. So, hello, she's going to be the voice of the students for the moment. She doesn't necessarily speak for all of the students, but they talk to one another and they sort of have a general consensus.
If we may, Pamela, can I go straight to Faye? Because I think certainly just listening to the very impassioned and understandable righteous indignation that I'm sensing here, it's always nice to find out what the people who are very much at the sharp end of this are actually making about it. And Faye, obviously, congratulations on your recent tremendous success. But would you like to share your own particular views on this particular issue?
But explain what the issue is, basically? Or actually, you could explain.
Well, yeah, essentially, what happened is, I'm sure you walked through how you heard about it, right? There was a budget cut and there was a lack of funding for my particular program at the school. And that means that our program can't finish out the year as they were expected to. They usually end earlier than the school year ends. They usually end in late May. But we were told that the program can only continue until April 12th. So the way that my school operates is pretty unique. It is unlike any other in the New York City system and probably in the nation. I can't say that, but essentially it works with partner programs. So all of our arts classes are in the second half of the day and they are taught by separate organizations than the DOE. So there's different programs for each major. There's a dance major, there's a musical theater major, and then there's drama. And our drama program is partnered with Waterwell. So Waterwell is our drama program. So for example, I go to school from 8:15 to 1:38 in the school building, and I have all my academic classes. And then from 2 to 4, I have my performing arts classes. And in other years, I have been going to studio spaces, because that's a lot of Waterwell's expense, is that they rent out studio spaces as they don't have their own building. But this year, I have all my classes in school. The seniors usually do. But what happened is there was a budget cut across the city. And because of the way that our program is structured, Waterwell's, it was expecting to get their budget for the second part of the year. And they were not given all the money that they need.
That they were promised.
They were essentially told that they could not get all the money at first in January. And then the school, the administration, said, no, wait, hold on. We're going to go look for this extra funding. We're going to go to the DOE. We're going to try and get it for you. And then in like the end of February, they came back and said we couldn't find the money. So Waterwell was not aware from January that they would have to change the amount of money that they were spending. So they continued on like usual, as they were told to do. So they weren't able to take into account what the budget cuts were going to be, and they didn't have the money to finish out until the work order. It's kind of complicated the way it works, and there's a bunch of legalities that I cannot speak on as I'm not a lawyer, but to my understanding, the relationship between the partner and the school is a very unique one. So there's no sort of contract that says that they have to finish out the rest of the year.
Can I just say one thing real quick? I believe that this negotiation process actually goes all the way back to September originally. And they were fighting over the money in September. And this is why Waterwell started a month late, because there was fights over it. Waterwell submitted their work order. So the DOE certifies vendors. And so the way the DOE works, they have to have three vendors submit a proposal. Those three vendors get certified. Then PPS works through them and says, okay, let's pick the best one. For years now, for probably 13 to 18 years, I've heard different numbers. It's always been Waterwell, because they were offering the best curriculum at the best price. So that's the way the city works. They try to get the lowest budget with the best curriculum that can provide the students with their best classes. So they submitted the work order, and everything was agreed on in the summer. Yes, there were DOE cuts across the board. However, this was a contract between PPAS choosing Waterwell, accepting their bid, and signing off on it. When they started a negotiation process at the beginning in September, there was an argument over it. I'm sure there's debates over, well, we can't provide this. Yes, well, that's what it's going to cost us for the whole year. So Waterwell tried to start late to absorb some of that cost so that they wouldn't have to be, you know, incur that. And so they started late. I think it was almost a month late in September. So the kids lost that because of this negotiation process, because Principal Dyer kind of sent back what they're deeming edit to the work order. But that's not how it works. DOE certified and PPAS accepted. So that shouldn't have come back to the, oh, well, we don't really want to pay that much. And so that was a negotiation process. Then Waterworld operated in good faith, saying, let's not let the kids suffer. Let's start, because this is getting too out of hand. We're coloring out the lines now. Let's just get started so the kids can start. So they started late in September. They were operating as normal, hoping that the negotiations would come back to the table and they would find the 20%. Come January, when Waterwell stated, hey, look, we're running out of the original budget that you gave us. You only gave us 80% of what was promised. We need the additional 20%. The pushback from PPAS and Principal Dyer right now is their language that they're using is Waterwell decided that they want to change contracts and they want more money. But that's why we asked, hey, why don't you show us the original work order? If you show us the original work order, then we would be able to see who's operating in bad faith here. And then, so Waterwell said, we're going to continue. We're going to run out our budget and hope that you could come up with the 20%. And then February 29th, they were told, nope, we're not going to give you the 20%. And then Waterwell went back to the table, looked at the money and said, okay, based on our budget that we have left, we can only operate until April 12th.
And we did not hear from the school March 12th.
Until March 12th. That's the school told us on March 12th. So we, 3 months, we could have started a GoFundMe back in January. We could have tried to pull together months now instead of a week. And I applaud Tennyson for what she did. And we only had 1 week to do this.
So it gets even better because, and I would love to have Mike speak. Just I'll start this off. And Mike, you can expand because I'm sure you're aware of it. We had a seventh grader who was an amazing student who took it upon herself to start a GoFundMe while all the adults were bickering. She went and started a GoFundMe and they, you know, really didn't know they did the, she found this organization, which is the PTA, and she chose the PTA as the organization that would take the money. So to the best of her ability and her parents' ability, they started this. And because of the celebrity that's involved with the alumni of the school, people, and there's an PPAS alumni Instagram, etc. She posted it and it blew up and a lot of celebrities came forth and alumni came forth and what have they raised now? $50,000 or something like
that? Yeah, it's like 52.
So so you know the rest, Mike. Why don't you continue if you don't mind taking the baton?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And you know, one thing I want to say is I can't speak to the motivations of anybody in terms of contract negotiation. I know from personal experience that the Department of Education can be challenging to work with, even when their intentions are good. You know, a big organization like that can be tricky. I also want to say that while I respect, Mark, what you're saying about the conflicts that have happened and all that, I don't think that I personally have all the details. I don't think any of us do. And so I don't want to speak to necessarily what's happened in terms of how we got here. I'm really focused on, hey, we're here. What can we do to make it better? And, you know, it's amazing the outpouring of support that's happened in the last few weeks. Personally, I think it's a sign of good things to come for the school. And, you know, I think, you know, I don't want to waste a crisis, right? So you know, it's a great opportunity for us to see what it's like when everyone comes together and pulls for something. And I, you know, I can speak for myself as well as I've spoken to a number of different parents on the PTA. I've spoken to Principal Dyer one-on-one. I'm confident that everyone is aligned on the goal of closing out this year the way it was originally planned. Certainly from a PTA perspective, you know, I honestly asked Principal Dyer one-on-one, if you had control over the money that was coming in, what would you want done with it? And what do you want me to fight to have done with it? And she said, you know, the intention of the child who raised it was to continue the drama program with Waterwell. That's what we should be figuring out a way to do. So, you know, that's my plan. I think it's amazing because, like you said, there's some celebrities that we have in our network that are bringing money to the table. I understand that there's a, outside of that GoFundMe, there's another donation that's happening. So I feel like we can close this gap. There's some logistics we have to work out, but you know, we can get there. It's going to be great.
There's also, yes, the original GoFundMe started with the PTA, PAS, PTA as the beneficiary. And as a result of that conversation that we had with the board, well, we were in the board meeting. We weren't allowed to speak, but we were chatting like crazy. As a result, what we extrapolated from that was the amount of red tape that would have to happen from, because it's a non-for-profit, can't contribute it directly to Waterwell, would have to transfer from PTA to PPAS, red tape and stalling there, plus also the funds that are going to be withdrawn from GoFundMe and PayPal, and then it needs to be cashed, cleared, and then sent to Waterwell. So that's why we did not stop our daughter from starting a second GoFundMe with Waterwell as the beneficiary.
Yeah, I wanted to explain that he started, their daughter started a GoFundMe. Before we lose Faye, because we've got her for about a minute, I wanted to ask Faye what her opinion is about all of this, because I have my own opinions, which maybe it's okay for me to have or not on the show, being that it is our show, Alex. But I want to ask Faye, what is your opinion as a senior who's about to graduate, your experience with it as a drama student who's gone through this in the 11th hour when the kids were just basically waiting to finish out their year?
Yeah, sorry guys, I have to go to work in a bit. But I mean, I'm sure that like, you know, your children feel the same way. It's really hard to, especially in a class that was disrupted by COVID in our eighth grade, and to get an eighth grade graduation and to get to go on all our field trips that we were promised. It's really hard to kind of go through that again in a different way, to have our year cut short. And there's a lot of projects that we were really excited to do in our last part of the year, like jury projects is what we do every year. And the senior juries are a really big deal. And so it is really hard to have to kind of deal with all this when you're just about to kind of hang up the towel and say, you know what, I'm done. I'm so excited to be free. You know, no more high school for me. But it's been really hard, and there's a lot of dedicated staff at the school who have been working really hard. And I felt for the people of Waterwell, my teachers who I love, who I know are going to probably suffer as a result of this cut and not be out of work. And these are working artists, and they don't have, you know, steady income. This is their steady income. So if they don't have, you know, if they don't have a promise of work next year or for the end remainder of this year, that's going to put them in a really hard situation. So I was definitely feeling that. And it's just been really hard. It's been emotional and difficult, but it has been great to see so much support from the school and from the alumni. And like Mike said, I really hope that this is a future of what we can make as I think we need a strong alumni network. We need to create an endowment of money so that something like this can happen, that we have a safety net around our school, because it's a scrappy school. Like, let's be honest, we rely on DOE funding. That's not a lot, especially for the arts. You know, we don't have the resources of some of the other performing arts schools in the city, but we still work with what we have. So I think it's important to, you know, try and network and try and create an environment that PPS can be more safe from things like this happening.
Thank you very much for that, Faye. If I can just actually interject momentarily, I mean, I'm listening to some very impassioned lines here and some very important comments that are being made. Just to return briefly to what Mike was talking about in terms of dialogue, because ultimately this all rests and hinges on communication and having communication channels that are actually open. I mean, what Faye didn't actually mention was obviously her generation, and indeed Adriana's generation, and these children have been through COVID. They went through the pandemic. They went through issues with respect to that in terms of their education. There are a number of other areas and factors that certainly as an educator on in the UK in higher education, we're well aware of the kind of stress and the mental challenges, the mental health challenges that impact on areas and projects like this. So I suppose my question really is, are those lines of dialogue with key stakeholders, and let's face it, the students are just as much key stakeholders in this as parents, are they open? Are they satisfactory? Are they transparent? Is there a sense that this is actually one way in which we can build on, hopefully, some kind of dialogue?
Yeah. Mark?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was saying to Adriana just now, that's one of the things that we would appreciate. Like, this is, yes, we're all jumping hurdles right now and we're trying to deal with the dilemma, but like ethical transparency and communication from the beginning would have had a far better outcome at this point. And that's really what we were saying. We said that in every meeting, transparency and communication. Had we all been privy to this at the beginning, had the PPS, PTA known about this from the beginning, we know that PTA drives hard for fundraising. And we know that they would have been hounding us and everybody. Yeah. We get emails constantly. And had that communication been open from the beginning, mm-hmm. we would have had a whole endowment at this point based on the amount of fundraising we could have done. But that's what we want moving forward. And we said, from now on, we need communication. We can't have this, you know, behind doors. Like, yes, you could have a meeting. Obviously, we may not be privy to everything. But when it comes down to the parents, we're all PTA members. And when it comes down to us questioning, hey, it's a he said, she said conversation, and there's a contract somewhere, and just bring it to light and this will be over. We won't need to argue over this. And it's just that transparency and communication that we've been asking for.
Yes, absolutely. And I just want to interject, but I'd love to get Mike's take on and his answer as well, what he thinks about that. Being the parent of a drama student specifically, and being that our program is the program that we are, that is in danger of being cut short, and also I am fighting not just for my daughter who's about to leave, but for all the kids in middle school up, because one thing that exists with the Waterwell program and with the PPAS school is a middle school and a high school. So it's not just a high school. The kids come in, I think, sixth grade, is it?
Yeah, sixth grade.
Right. So is that they're, despite potentially thinking, you know, despite good intentions, even though people in their good intentions might have not had given complete transparency, whatever their motivation was, it's hard to go back and regain faith and believe that the motivations were good and pure if what was done was obfuscation and as people would say, throwing other partners under the bus, which we feel. And I'm going to take a leap here and say that I feel that Waterwell has been absolutely transparent. And I feel that they are, you know, they came forth with a statement basically that they released. It's public now. But I don't feel the same confidence myself personally as a parent in the way that the principal has handled it and in the way that the school superintendent, the powers that be on that side of it have handled it. Because unless I heard incorrectly, I was told conflicting things. We were told conflicting things. And a theater company involved, Waterwell, who is really who I am trying to save at this point. We're a bit misrepresented, I think, in the media, and also in by the principal. And whatever the intentions were, I began to lose faith as one of the parents. I can't speak for all parents, but I began to lose faith in our principal and our school, not in the theater department.
And also, unfortunately, because some of the way it was represented was we started losing faith in the PTA as well, because unfortunately they met with Principal Dyer, and the language and rhetoric was repeated from Principal Dyer through the PTA board meeting. And we obviously were just sitting back and we could only listen. We're chiming in the chat and saying, that is not what happened in the meeting. We were there for Heather's statement. We were there for the whole meeting, and she was fully transparent with everything. Mm-hmm. So we started losing faith in the PTA as well. So, and that's unfortunate because of the missed communications.
Yeah, fair. And, you know, I think, I guess two things I'd like to say on this. One is that this is all happening very fast, you know, and I think it's going to take a while before, you know, we get through crisis mode, which for me, crisis mode is keep program going, get money to where it needs to get to. And then the second piece of it is, I think, coming together and talking these things out as a community. I do know that having worked with Waterwell really closely, like I said, my daughter was in the Waterwell program until just last year. And so I think a great relationship with the people who run it. I worked really closely with Heather myself over the years. And, you know, honestly, she's helped our family in ways that, like, I'm just ever forever grateful for. So there's absolutely no intent on my part, and I don't think from any PTM members, to have conflict with Waterwell. But these things are tricky. And I think that a lot of times it might not be that people are misrepresenting things as much as they are defensive and scared, mm-hmm. and you know, and maybe won't speak in a way that provides complete transparency because they're worried that if they do, then that'll come back to bite them in some weird way. So I think once we have a chance for, you know, like I said, to get through crisis, I think that maybe just some more conversations can help heal all that. I hope, you know, and, you know, the other thing,
we're not out of the woods yet, right?
right. Yeah. So I'm like, let's laser focus. We can't solve everyone's feelings right away. But the second thing is, you know, as a PTA, you know, we weren't, the PTA itself, which I'm a part of, wasn't informed of this early. Maybe some members were, and, you know, I haven't had a chance to debrief with everybody. I found out that this was going to be happening on Friday from Principal Dyer. And my understanding was she was putting together a message that was intended to go to the whole school about this. The challenge for Principal Dyer is that she's still, although she's not an interim principal anymore, the DOE system still represents her that way. So all of her communications have to be vetted by, like, a committee. So she had written the announcement of this, intending it for to go out to the school, which I'm sure would have had additional information in it. That still didn't get approved. And she's like, at this point, it wouldn't even, that's completely the wrong thing to say. So I know that just logistically, like I said, with DOE, there's some challenges that I think, from my perspective, I don't think are about trying to hide things. I think they're about the nature of being a DOE employee that can really feel as a parent. You're like, why am I not getting these answers immediately? Why can't I get a copy of the PO? Well, like, even if somebody wants to send you a copy of the PO, I'm not sure that that's a good idea, or even it would be a thing that they're allowed to do. So, you know, for us, I think we need to, like, take a breath and, you know, not necessarily have blind faith, but have some trust that, like I said, the intentions I think are good, and let's figure this out together. And so for me, we have this PTA meeting that's coming up on Tuesday. It's really important that everybody come to it because, you know, the PTA can't do anything to solve this problem without the members of it, which, you know, you both would be voting, right? So the members need to show up and say, we would like to take this money that's coming in and give it to the Waterwell program. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. Everyone I talk to says that's what they want to do.
Yeah, it's a little bit. Absolutely. It's a little bit further complicated by the fact that it's a very, the American bureaucracy is a very slow moving engine. And what happens now, the funds get tied up in a specific way. So there's a certain language and the funds can't even be released directly to the theater company. This is where we are right now, where, you know, we're fighting to make sure that the funds go exactly to this theater company in particular, because they are the drama partners which are involved and which our kids love and which they want to finish out the year with.
If I can just again just interject and take the sort of the more objective thing, because I think we've had some very impassioned arguments and very important arguments, and clearly this is a podcast that will be released, that people who might see themselves on the other side of this argument can happily listen to, and we welcome their contributions and connectivity within that. As you know, there are issues with respect to the art system per se. I do feel, though, that in essence, Mike's point of looking to actually build on this and hopefully sort of develop from this is critical. Adriana, if I can come to your good self again, in terms of as somebody who is at the sharp end of this, do you feel optimistic? I mean, obviously, we will clearly happily have another Zoomer dedicated to yourselves and the program. But do you feel as though this has been a useful, at least, opportunity to express some of your concerns about the challenges you've been faced with?
Hi, Alex. So my name's Adriana. I'm actually a parent, student.
She looks just like our daughter, though.
She looks like a student. It's wonderful.
Our daughter, her name is Xiomara, but everyone knows her as Zio. So right now, I guess my frustration as a parent is that, as Mark has mentioned, and a lot of parents did mention at the meetings, why can't we just change the beneficiary from the original GoFundMe to for the funds to go directly to Waterwell? We feel that it would cut a lot of this red tape, bureaucracy nonsense. It would hopefully save on this timeline that we have now, or deadline, I should say, that's now this coming Friday, March 22nd.
Because PTA is not certified.
So I'm a little stressed out by all this. And this is why our daughter said, why not just make another GoFundMe so all the funds can go directly to Waterwell and we just cut through all of this. So Mike, I would actually like to hear from you. Why is it that the beneficiary cannot, or why can't the PTA just say, you know what, that makes sense, why can't we just switch the beneficiary from PTA directly to Waterwell? Why is that such an issue now?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And you know, from a PTA perspective, we can't decide what the beneficiary is on that. We didn't set up the GoFundMe. And I think from my perspective, I really want to make sure I'm respecting the rights and the wishes of the person who set that up, both as a PTA member and just as a family member. That seems like the right thing to do. As a donor to that, I fully expect that the money would go to the Waterwell program for this year. That's the whole point of the fundraiser, right? So if that is truly the easiest way to accomplish what needs to be accomplished, then that's, sure, that could work. But my intention, if the money is going to the PTA, is to have the same thing happen at the end anyway. So just to clarify, because there's been a lot of, I think, rumors or misunderstandings about how things work. A PTA can only send money to places based on a budget that's been approved by the PTA members, right? So no matter who on the PTA wants to do anything, we just can't. Our intention is to have a meeting on Monday night. We called an emergency meeting and to talk with the families about making a couple of changes to our rules. Because right now our rules say that when we fundraise, it's always spread among all students equally, or you know, close to equally, where this is a very directed fundraiser for a specific purpose. So we need approval for everyone to say, like, that's an okay thing to do, which I on the executive board, everybody agreed that we should do that. The second thing we'll need to do is make a bunch of budget amendment that says we would like to fund Waterwell program X dollars. And you know, that number is moving because obviously more money is coming in, but we will collectively vote to approve that transfer of funds for that amount. And hopefully by then, and I know that some folks from Waterwell are meeting with other folks from the PTA on Monday, we need Waterwell to send the PTA like a bill, right? For a thing for us to pay, right? Because we can't just send money randomly. So hopefully they're going to work out what that is. So we'll have a thing to vote for on Tuesday. I think that'll work. But I also would say, like, absolutely any money that can come, whether it's going directly to Waterwell or going to the PTA, is good, right? So other GoFundMe's, yes, more of everything. And let's in the end, we'll get the money there. I don't know that it'll be enough to keep the program going. I don't know that it'll be in time to keep the program going. Those are things that Waterwell would have to answer for. I certainly hope so. But there's no intention from anybody that I've heard to delay.
Right. I think that was one of the biggest issues that was discussed during the PTA meeting, was that the PTA, if quote me if I'm wrong, cannot actually pay anything towards salaries. And that is the bulk of the $102,000 that Waterwell needs to pay their teaching artists. So I guess my other question is this, just so we could be clear. So we did speak about two schools. There's the middle school and then it's the high school. So the middle school, all of their performing arts foundation, is that taught by Waterwell?
So I believe there are a couple of DOE employees who do some of the teaching as well. I know Mr. Parente, and there's a...
Yes. Right.
But,
the main chunk of what they get for their foundation courses is through Waterwell.
Yes. Yeah.
So absolutely. When Tennyson set up the account, she did it to save the arts. So right now, I would say that the chunk of the arts is actually water well taught. And that was her intention. She didn't really think about the differences in high school between middle school. So middle school right now is currently taught through water well, all their PA classes. That will be lost as well for all of the middle school students. Now, high school is a little different because, as Faye had mentioned, there are different majors. There's drama, musical theater, vocal, and there's
film
production, yeah. Right? Drama is the one that's being mostly is affected. It's going to be impacted, totally cut, right? So I guess when we're talking about that, I feel like I hope I'm not misspeaking, but Tennyson's intention was to save the arts, and that it's going to be, it's Waterwell, because Waterwell is teaching that chunk to the middle school students, and Waterwell is also teaching the drama department.
Yeah, yes, that's a great point. And
go ahead.
I met with Principal Dyer, and because I wanted to make sure I was clear on that point, because I think maybe it could get it lost a little bit. You know, there were DOE cuts that were across the board, right? And each one of the vendors that the school works with have different contract situations and have different negotiations and all that. My understanding from Principal Dyer is while there are needs for the other majors that maybe aren't being met and that we want to talk about separately, and that I'll certainly be talking to her about, that the critical acute need that we're talking about solving here is really what you just said. So it's the arts program for the middle schools, as well as the drama program for
Waterwell.
Which is Waterwell, right? So I just wanted to get a clear answer from her. Is there any feeling, you know, from her perspective, that we would want to, or is there any desire that anybody is trying to push to use the money that's being raised for some other thing other than that? And the answer is no.
Well, maybe not on the principal's side, but we did hear a few parents that were in other majors requesting that they get funds from it. That's what kind of ignited a little bit of, like, there was a huge debate over it, because parents were like, oh, we need new lighting. It was like, wait a minute. No, this was all, can't piggyback this effort.
I would like to say something. I'm sorry.
Yes,
I'm just going to interject and cut in, because there's been a second GoFundMe started, which is not complicated in the sense that it can go directly to Waterwell funding. And if I want to tell people where they can go for this fundraising effort. And I think the clearest thing to do is, there's a number on it. It's a GoFundMe. And so if you go to GoFundMe.me/2D14D565. I think that's what it's listed under. People can go and they can donate. It was started by Zio. What is her surname?
Xiomara Marenko.
And on that point, I'm afraid we have actually run out of time, but I have to say many thanks to all the contributors today. Pamela, I appreciate your already biased towards this campaign, and I think that's perfectly understandable. We wish you very well. I'm sure we'll return back to the topic of the discussion at a further date. But for the moment, many thanks. And from New York Real Talk, we will say farewell, and let's hope we get out of this pickle.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That's Siren Radio. Turn up, everyone, save a siren sound. Come Lincoln to Miami, Paris to LA. Our global community wants to hear it play. Students participate, keep on keeping up, 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 say Siren Radio.
Well, We all like to be seen as doing kind things, but how many do we actually do? According to a recent report from Tesco, 265 per year, which is pretty much about 5 good deeds a week. And how do we classify those good deeds? And why are they so important? Well, we're delighted to actually welcome a genuinely kind psychologist to actually talk us through this whole process. It's Emma Kenny. How are you, Emma?
Oh, I'm really good. Thank you for the introduction.
It was always great to connect with your good self. Were you surprised by this research? Because when I saw the number one most common good deed being holding the door open for someone else, I thought that was just good manners, actually, not necessarily being kind.
So I'm not surprised by it, but I think you raise a really important point, actually. I think we underestimate the amount of good deeds that we do. So that's where people have reflected and thought, well, holding the door open for someone or having it held open for me feels like a good deed. And like you said, often that's just second nature to us. But if you start to actually unpick it, well, it's not, it's a choice. And the choice is that we do something positive for another person, often a stranger, without thinking. And that says something really notable about human beings, because we concentrate a lot of focus on negative behavior, but ultimately we fail to note that most of the time, most human beings are operating with really positive behavior and doing really good things without even thinking about it, as you note.
And that tendency to doing good, to actually being good, is something which perhaps we need to recall and bring to mind in a world in which it seems as though we're frequently faced with a whole series of unkind activities and insensitive activities that are going on, which make us feel that this is a very unkind place.
100%. I often think that we underestimate our self-power and we underestimate who we are as human beings. And that's quite nice to some degree because it makes us a bit humble. But if we forget to notice all the good stuff that we're doing, we can get quite jaded. And we do, in the UK in particular, do lots of nice things for each other, as you noted, without even considering that it's that nice. Even things like popping on a cup of tea for a colleague or noticing that somebody's had their hair done. Those little moments that you've said, I see you, you're visible to me. You don't know what kind of an impact that can have on somebody, because it can be profound. You don't know that they are lonely. You don't know that they haven't got people to take care of them in the way that you're doing in that moment. And often if we just take a second to reflect and think, actually, I do have a big impact on the world around me. It makes you feel so much more positive. We are hardwired, don't get me wrong, to notice the negatives. And we're hardwired because on a survival mechanism, if we notice negatives, we're more likely to survive. But ultimately, that means we really need to concentrate our focus when we're doing good things. One of the reasons I've absolutely love doing this Tesco campaign is because the Golden Grants, which is an opportunity for anybody, by the way, who's listening, if your Tesco store is participating in the Golden Grants campaign, basically you can go in, there's little blue tokens you select, you know, at the till, and you go pop them in to a cause local to you. They're doing one where if you pick a golden one out, you get £5,000 to give to a local cause or school of your choice. And so if you want to have a direct impact on the world around you, between 12 and 1 on Saturday the 16th in Tesco, go in and do that. Because like I said, it takes a second for you, but that's going to be £5,000 for a cause that's going to have a profound impact on it.
It's a bit like George Bailey in the buildings and loan category of It's a Wonderful Life. You don't realise how much of an impact you're having until maybe it's brought into sharp focus.
I love that film.
Assessment. It is good. I mean,
it's absolutely wonderful. I love that every time I speak to you, you always have some lovely literary quote. It's great.
Well, Emma, I obviously want to maintain that standard. Looking at the other top 10 aspects, I mean, some of them, as you'd say, are giving money to charity, trying to boost someone's confidence. We looked at that. Even just giving someone a message just to check on how they were. I mean, that's something which, you know, in a world post-pandemic, perhaps is also very significant and important.
Absolutely, because those things might take you 10 seconds, 15 seconds, 20 seconds, but to the person receiving it, it's the impact and it's the intent. So when you think somebody is thinking about me, even if it's just dropping them a quick line, you don't know what kind of day they're having and it can change the direction of the day. And I always say, words can kill, words can create, because you can really make a difference positively to somebody with a simple sentence. And we've seen that play out where people have said, look, things were really bad for me. And then this person said this set of words to me that they've thought nothing of, but actually really triggered change. And it made me realise that somebody noticed me and I was visible. And it's why volunteers do so well. So when we talk about the ripple effect, we're not just talking about, OK, I do a good deed and other people pay it forward. That's obviously one side of it. But we're thinking about the actual physiological and psychological ramifications of being a good person and doing good deeds. So first of all, you do a good deed, you feel good about it. Also, that means you're going to reduce stress. You're going to reduce anxiety levels. Physiologically, you're going to lower your blood pressure. So these kind of acts don't just make a better life. They give you the opportunity of a longer life. That's why volunteers tend to have happier relationships and live longer lives, because they're doing good. So that reframing of good deeds being just about the impact we have on the world around us and internalizing it and saying, no, I'm having an impact on me, that's really good to know.
Kind of being selfless for selfish reasons, really. But then again,
that reminds me of Phoebe in Friends when she was trying to do a really good deed and then realized that every time she tried, she just felt really good about it. So ultimately could never do something altruistic and selfless because you always feel good about it.
Precisely. Well, it's Saturday the 16th of March, of course, for the Tesco's Stronger Starts Golden Grants celebrations. But I think you'd endorse the fact, Emma, that good deeds should be for life, not just for Saturday the 16th of March.
Absolutely. And you know what? The more you do, the better you feel, and hopefully the longer you'll live. So that's not a bad equation to follow, is it?
Absolutely, sir. And Emma, remind folk how people can follow your good self via the vast range of social media that's out there.
I'm always Emma Kenny TV. And also, if you want to find out whether a Tesco store local to you is participating, go on tescoplc.com/strongerstarts and have an impact directly on your community with £5,000.
Ever the consummate professional psychologist and broadcaster extraordinaire, Emma Kenny. We salute you as ever. Take care.
Take care, sweetheart.
Now, we've spoken a lot already this month about the challenge of PTSD. We've had March for March, a whole range of other aspects in terms of fundraising and so on. But what about the whole notion of the NHS in general? How can it actually help in terms of this? Well, they are actually raising awareness with respect to a project called Operation Courage for the Veterans Mental Health and Wellbeing Service. And to talk about this, we're delighted to welcome NHS England Associate Medical Director for the Armed Service Forces and Veterans Health. That's Dr. Jonathan Leach, OBE. Jonathan, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, great to connect with your good self, but certainly this whole notion of mental health and well-being, something which thankfully we have progressed as a civilization substantially since, 110 years ago, people who actually suffered trauma in the battlefield were basically just regarded as deserters possibly and even sort of executed. So we've made progress, but do we still have a long way to go?
Yeah, I think we do. I think particularly with regard to the military community, and obviously there are many members of particularly the Air Force who have settled in your area, is the vast majority of veterans are absolutely fine. And I think that's an important point. Actually, as they leave the services, they bring range of skills, experiences, you know, work ethic, which can be really positive to employers. And I think that is a really important point. But within that, we know that there are significant numbers who have disease. So what we've been trying to do, particularly through What Courage and some of the other initiatives, is actually provide a very specific and more detailed for military veterans so that, for example, they are often seen by people who have an understanding of the military. One of the things we hear regularly is people don't come forward because, firstly, the stigma around mental health, and that's obviously, as you described, still in society, but is better than it used to be, I agree. But also for the military community, there are additional ones. You know, I'm not going to see this civvy. They won't understand me. They won't understand what I've seen. They won't understand my culture. So actually, Op Courage provides that. And that you would get seen and assessed by people who have a deep understanding of the needs of the military. And what's so important with that is that you then get people with you can trust. Because trust is really important in terms of being able to have that therapeutic relationship with people, people who understand you. And the other thing about this is the fact that when we designed Op Courage, you do not need a GP referral. And that's absolutely deliberate. We don't want barriers. We would rather people come forward earlier. And this is before, as an example, people might turn to alcohol or drugs, go downtown, get a criminal conviction, things like this. So actually intervening earlier, so keeping those barriers as low as possible is really important. So you can self-refer. And in fact, the data shows that of about the 30,000 we've had through Op Courage over recent years, About 60% are self-referrals, referrals by a loved one, such as a partner or family member, or alternatively by charities such as Help for Heroes or RAF Benevolent Fund, things like this. So really important that people understand that these services are available, they're tailored, and to come forward earlier rather than later.
Jonathan, you've provided a very lucid and very effective summation of the situation with respect to Op Courage. Is it all fundamentally down to that communication, actually having the courage, quite literally, to say, look, I'm having difficulty, I need to actually basically discuss my challenges?
Yeah, so it's called Op Courage. Actually, that was a name by the veterans as part of our very active patient participation group. And they recognised that it takes courage to come forward. And so it was their name and it was their choice, which I agree with, which is the reason why it's called that. And it's really important that people come forward. And then in parallel with the Op Courage, we've also got Op to Restore, which actually looks at physical health. And then we've been rolling out, for example, GP accredited surgeries, whereby we have maybe a GP lead. So if I just use a clinical example, the gentleman thinking of actually was in the RAF. He sadly saw his best friend killed in Afghanistan, had PTSD from that, and also had intractable pain from other injuries that he endured. So actually, I, as a part of a veteran accredited practice, referred him into Op Courage. So he had specific dedicated mental health support for that, but also had specific dedicated help for his physical problems. And actually treating the two in parallel was really important. And he's now so much better. And I think that's a testament to what we're trying to do.
Looking at the long-term prognosis, would you say that actually we are in a better state dealing with issues such as this, or do we still have a long way to go?
I think we are in a better place. I think there is still a lot of stigma. We also know that, sadly, a number of veterans take their life. We've been doing a lot of work regarding, you know, what we can do to help and support. I come from a perspective that every sad loss of somebody is avoidable. And so we certainly need to do more work there. And we're doing that. You know, as an example, I've been involved with somebody over this last weekend who sadly tried to take his life last week. He's in hospital receiving support and treatment. And then Op Courage will actually reach into the hospital and, as he's discharged, support him as he's been discharged. So, yes, we have more to do there. I think also I said at the beginning that the vast majority of veterans are absolutely fine. I gave a talk to a local council. And I said one of the key things actually is understanding that the vast majority of veterans are absolutely fine. They bring these skills, give them a job, these social determinants, so that actually you get, you know, you have a job, you have an income, you have a roof over your head, are really important in terms of the overall mental health and also physical health of anybody, but specifically veterans.
Mm-hmm. You may not be able to answer this without any data, but how does England compare with other countries when it comes to military services? I mean, thinking obviously we have a series, sadly, of global conflicts going on. Mm-hmm. Are there any indications that there are international support structures for veterans in other areas and other countries?
Yeah, actually, it's a good question. We regularly discuss things with our international partners, particularly the those with English language. So, for example, I was recently on a meeting with Australian government representatives, similarly previously with Canadian. Actually, they're looking at what we're doing. We gave evidence to a Royal Australian Royal Commission. They've got a particular issue regarding Australian veterans who sadly take their life. And they're doing a lot of work there. But actually, they came across only a few months ago. They were looking, not just in this country, but elsewhere, about, you know, how they can organise their veteran services better to support people, and particularly to avoid some of these complete tragedies. And they were particularly impressed with what we've been doing, for example, with GPs, and they've emulated. So if I just give an example, my daughter, Dr. Helen Leach, recently qualified as a GP. We got the care of the military into the curriculum for all GPs nationally, so that as Helen qualified as a GP, you know, she will have needed to have known about, you know, high blood pressure or antenatal care, you know, as part of being a doctor and a general practitioner. We've also got that deliberately into the curriculum for all GPs. So actually GPs should have that base understanding. So they've been, our international partners have been very interested, and actually the Australians have now similarly managed to put care of the military community into their equivalent curriculum for general practitioners who qualify in Australia. So, you know, we talk regularly with our international partners because there's no monopoly of ideas, and we try and take ideas from them just as they take ideas from us.
The human connection is so vital and so important, but I can already see folks beginning to think, oh, maybe artificial intelligence and chat GPTs can actually help with respect to this. Is it something from your own perspective, Jonathan, that actually this cannot be replaced by machine technology? You do need to actually have that human point of contact.
It depends, actually. There is evidence that, for example, some of the PTSD, if you've got less complicated PTSD, there is evidence around things like depression, that some of the online therapies can actually be really helpful. So I wouldn't discount it. But on the other side, having that human side and trust with your health professional, I don't think will ever go. But I think that certainly, you know, there is evidence that some of these therapies can be of value online. And the NHS.uk website, for example, does include some of those. But certainly, if you've got more complicated, you need more support, actually having that human touch, I suspect, will always be there. I can't see that would go. We're just as we are as humans.
And a reminder, where can people actually go to access details regarding OpCourage?
Yeah, so the easiest way is take your Google or whichever is your favorite search engine and just put in OpCourage. I looked this morning in Google, it came up first. If you want to go direct, it would be all the W's, nhs.uk/OpCourage. And those that website and associated pages have all the details of OpCourage, which is the mental health program. It has details of OpRestore, how you can access that, which would be through your GP. It's also got a lot of other support for, you know, and detail about, for example, GP accreditation, as I've described. So that's where we would go first. And then a lot of military charities have all these details as well.
Dr. Jonathan Leach, OBE, NHS England Associate Medical Director for Armed Forces Veterans Health. Trips off the tongue so easily. Many thanks indeed. Take care and all the very best.
Thank you very much.
Siren Radio.
What a scenario without Siren Radio. Stand up, everyone, save our siren sound. From Lincoln to Miami, Paris to LA, our global community wants to hear it play.
Siren Radio.
Let them all create students, participate. Keep on keeping on, save our siren.